I started on zero.
Yes.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, I thought I was trying to.
It's recording.
Yay.
Hey, Greg. Hey, Greg.
Hello. How are you?
How am I? I'm very good.
Hey, hello. So I got to tell you, man, I watched the Sydney fireworks, the New Year's Eve fireworks for the first time, what was it, two nights ago?
Okay.
And I was expecting them to be, okay, you know, I thought they'd be pretty good. But then, man, once they got going, and we had this great view from our friend's apartment just in North Sydney, and halfway through, I just went, wow, this is like a really good fireworks show. And I kind of thought, this is one of those kind of bucket list moments. I really, really liked it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I guess it is, like, having grown up here, it's like one of those things that's just always there.
Mm.
And you're like, oh yeah. And like, I've been to the Sydney fireworks, I think, twice. And I know that sounds like not much, but oh man, I just avoid it. Having to drive and park in the city, like, avoid it. Like, if I had a house, absolutely. But it's just a nightmare. But I'm glad you enjoy them.
Mm-hmm. It's like anything, when it's on your doorstep, you tend not to worry that much.
You're like, I can do it next year. I can do it next year.
Yeah. But and because we're in the school apartment and we're looking down, and at about 1 o'clock, there was just this sea of people all trying to get to the train. And we would be a good 2 kilometers or maybe 1 kilometer from the train station, and it was just people everywhere. It wasn't one queue, it was like the whole region was just filled with people all trying to get to the same place, and we were looking out the window, like, you know, having a few drinks and being like, very
hey
thankful.
Guys. Yeah. I have this memory of when I was like 17 or 16 and I went up with friends on the train and watched the fireworks and then hung out, and then trying to get back home. And this is when I was living in Barrel, but trying to get home, and then try and get from the harbour to Central. Well, there's no chance of getting a cab, so let's walk. Finally got to Central. Last train was at 1:30 and it was like 2. Next train was at 10 to 6 in the morning. So we just had to sleep on the grass outside Central. Like, I felt like a real bum. Like, part of me was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And then the other part of me was like, this is horrible.
This is the worst thing. And especially at that age where, you know, when things don't quite go to plan, it's like not cool.
Yeah, and then since then, I have not even ventured anywhere near them. But I'm glad you enjoyed them.
There's this funny thing I saw at about 8:30. So 8:30, before, you know, like on New Year's Eve, and just looking out the window, and there's a guy, cool guy, like cruising down the road with a box of, it looked like a box of beer, but I think they were a box of cans of cider.
Oh, nice!
And he was just like, yeah, super cool, walking down the hill, and he dropped the whole box. And the box hit the ground, and I'm just watching, like, whatever. And all the ciders, they start rolling in different directions.
Oh no!
One goes down the hill, like straight down. One's going on the angle, and it was like three different directions. And he didn't know where to go to get them all. And so he must have been a little bit drunk, and he was like picking one up, and then looking around, and then these four police officers who were standing like 10 meters, and it's all no alcohol zone, right? These four police officers all just very casually walk over, and I didn't see them, but I just saw him kind of like go to pick the second can up and look up, and then just like stand up, and like he just like
slowly slump.
Yes, his shoulders like slump forward, and he's like, ugh. And they just like put out their hand. He gives them all of the cider and just keeps walking.
Oh, poor guy. And he just wanted to have a nice New Year's.
And the best part was, we're like on this corner, and so I was watching, and then as the police started walking up, we hear the police all laughing to themselves.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, because you get like a bird's eye view of everyone.
Yeah. It was
really... Where is this apartment?
It's just near Lavender Bay. If there's
that's right.
Yep. It's on...
Damn, you must have a crazy view.
Yeah, it was amazing. I put some photos.
Wow.
Oh, hey, I'll put a photo on our Snappening Facebook page.
Snappening.
People can
That's
see
a good
it.
Idea.
Yeah,
we should probably post more on that, shouldn't we?
I think it's hard when you've got my personal Facebook, my business Facebook, my personal Instagram, my business Instagram. Now I have the Snappening.
I know. So many. I tried to open an Instagram for the cottages that we own in Barrel, which are available for short stay rental, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Good plug.
And I was like, yeah, this is going to be so good. I'm going to post so many photos. And that was about 2 months ago, and I've posted 3 photos. And I had really good intentions. I don't know, man. Managing multiple social media accounts is like, managing one is hard enough. Like, I'm not one of those people who, you know, there are some photographers who are like obsessed with their social media accounts. And like, I don't know, like, I think especially Instagram, but we'll just post just so religiously and take it all, like check their likes and stuff. Like, I just, I'm terrible. I mean, I'll go 4 days without posting on Instagram, then I'll post. And then, so yeah, managing multiple accounts, yeah. Not good for me.
Yeah, and you fall into that trap of thinking, "Oh, am I lazy for not doing like Instagram every single day?" And then this is a good time of year to reflect on that because it's holidays. And I had a moment earlier this week where I was like, "Oh, I haven't checked anything for 2 days," and then I was just like, "Yeah, well, I'm on holiday. Like, this is actually a
That's
holiday."
That's what it is. Yeah. And it's really important to take those. It's really important to have that downtime, or else you just end up. I don't know. I think we've talked about this. You just end up burning out. Mm-hmm. Did you put your stuff away and just stop for this period? You did, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Because good man. Yeah, my camera gear is away. It's been really nice. I did actually take the old 16 to 35 for a bit of a walk around Sydney a couple of days ago, which was nice. That 16 millimeter, I was standing. We went under the Harbour Bridge on the city, on the city side. It's just around there. And I was standing. I was standing like 20 meters from the pylon, like right under the bridge, and with the 16 mil I could still get the whole bridge in one photo.
It's crazy. It's crazy great, wide, man. Right,
it's cool. Yeah it's nice.
Yeah, did you get a few beers deep on New Year's or what?
I had a few. Yeah, I had a couple.
Yeah,
you know, just a couple of casual sips. How about yourself? Sips. What did you actually do?
I just went to a I guess you would say it's a house party. I just went to one of my mates lives in Menai, which is like halfway between Wollongong and Sydney, and we just went there and sat around and then had dinner, had a barbecue and had a few drinks, and then at about 2 minutes to midnight Michelle said, "Oi, where's the timer?" And so we were like, I think I got my phone and I was like, I got to about 10 seconds to midnight and I was like, "Hey, 10 and then nothing. Then what? I went 3, 2, 1 and we're just like, and then we were like, "Let's go to bed." Oh man, yeah, I just, you know, another day.
A grown-up New Year's.
Well, you know, I sound silly. Yeah, pretty much. I just
an old man. Old man New Year's.
In my experience, New Year's has always just been like a sparkler that doesn't really. The end of a sparkler where it just
fizzles
out, and then it's not like back in the day when it was like how things change.
Well, man, I get it. I saw a thing, I don't know, a few days ago, and it was like 4 pictures, and it was like New Year's when you're 16, and it was this kid like going crazy, and it was like New Year's when you're 20, and it was like partying, and then New Year's when you're 30, and it's like in bed, you know.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I'm in my 30s, so I should have been there last guy, but man, we raged, man. I was up till 5 in the morning.
Beast. Nice one.
I even had to, like, I got to 1 and I had the droopy eyes. I was like sitting in the corner. I was all done, and then Nathan, our host, he saw me and he's like, "Fuck, got me a Red Bull," and like,
"Oh,
had
wow,
to smash your Red Bull." And I was like,
"Are you
dude,
serious?"
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And I was like, "Dude, there's no point. Don't even bother. Like, wow. Come on." But it worked, man. Within a few minutes, I was back on top.
I accidentally just turned Siri on.
Oh yes,
by saying, "Are you serious?" And now she's like literally writing down everything that I'm saying.
Oh yeah, that's good. Have you got your?
I don't know what that means. If you like, I can search the web for. I feel I just turned Siri on by saying, "Are you serious?" And now it's she's Amanda. She's like literally running by everything that I'm saying.
What?
Like literally,
she's off her face. Wow.
Good.
Cool.
Hey,
cool.
I reckon we should answer that question. I don't remember who I actually asked the question, but someone asked a question about making it through winter when you're not selling so many bookings, you know?
Right. That is a really good question. Do you want to go first?
Shall I phrase it as a question for you? How about that? Hey, Tom. Hey,
okay.
Hey, Tom. What's up?
Hey, man, what's up? Stop snapping.
Hey, Tom. So you know how you know how in the winter you do less weddings as a general rule?
Yes.
Have you got any tips or advice for people when it comes to like getting through winter financially?
Yes. Was there a truck just reversing in your apartment?
Oh, maybe. In my apartment? No. Oh, but possibly nearby.
You know, Greg, thanks for asking that question.
Hey, no worries.
It's interesting. Before I started shooting a lot of weddings, so when I was starting out, I had heard this from various pros saying they put aside money for winter or they, you know, planned ahead for it. It's funny. I've never really felt it was an issue because, well, first of all, I guess you do need to plan financially and make sure there's enough money in the bank to do things like pay a mortgage or rent or whatever. But every year that I've been shooting, I've still been booking heaps of weddings over winter. So I actually have never really, I've never really had a problem with surviving that winter period. I guess also in where we are in down in Australia and New Zealand, well, especially in Oz, there are weddings all through winter. So definitely there are fewer weddings. As I think, as you know, and I think, I don't know if we've talked about, Michelle and I go overseas for around 3 months every winter, every Australian winter. So June, July, August, we head overseas. So I don't even mind that I'm not doing weddings during that period because I'm away, but the one winter that I wasn't away, I think I did like six weddings over winter. So that was fine to keep me going. And our really cold winter is quite short. It's only really June, July, and the start of August. It's only a 2 month period. So, it's for us down here. I don't think that's such an issue. Because you're still doing weddings, so you're still collecting balance payments. You're still doing a few weddings, not as many, but some. And you're still booking weddings. Like I book heaps of weddings in winter for the following year. So I'm still taking deposits and some balances. So honestly, I guess if you were in a really snowy part of the world, like if you're in Canada or somewhere in Europe, where you literally have no balance payments coming through, I guess that might be tough. And I guess the answer would be pretty simple. I guess plan accordingly and put aside enough money to last that period. But I don't know. I've never really felt it is an issue. Have you?
No. I feel the same way that I take a lot, or I would almost say the majority of my sales, maybe not right through June, July, but definitely the August. This year, especially like August, September, October, I booked so many weddings for next year in the summer that it wasn't ever an issue. But I think the one thing that I would suggest is people, because I see this come up a lot on Facebook pages and photographers asking how much of a deposit they take. What sort of deposit do you take, Tom?
Good question. $1,000.
$1,000. So as a percentage, it's... Yeah, I don't know, 20 to 30%, something like that.
20, it's probably 25 to 30%.
Sure.
Or around 20 to 25% or something, yes.
Yeah.
Let's say a quarter-ish.
So one thing that I learnt when I used to have like this double glazing business, and it was the first time I had to do proper sales, and I'd go to people's houses and, you know, do the measure and sale and all that. And I did like sales training. And one of the first things that they told us was that you've got to be taking a 50% deposit because it just simply gives you way better cash flow. It just balances everything out through the year. And at the time I was like, whoa, 50%, because when you're taking a 20% or a 30% deposit and then suddenly you're asking people for a 50%, it can seem like they would...
A lot more.
Yeah, it's a lot more. It's a lot harder to twist their arm to give you that kind of money. But I didn't hesitate for when I got into weddings. I just always said 50% deposit, and I just, because I'd had that mindset already, I never thought
you were fine with it.
I was totally fine, and look, it's great. It's fantastic for cash flow because, like I said, it just balances everything out. You actually are getting some decent money in the bank, you know, when you're taking that deposit. And I still do. It's a completely non-refundable deposit. Like I don't give them any special concessions because they're paying me more money. I'm just like, no, that's how it goes. It's got to be 50%. So, yeah, my little bit of advice, if people are out there and they're having these quiet periods, increase your deposit size, and it will help you get through.
Yeah, it's a good point. I also think that I'm not sure of the business status of the person who asked the question. Like, if it's a person who maybe is in the earlier stages of their career, maybe they don't have a huge number of bookings on the books yet. Mm. That is definitely maybe more of an issue because they're like, okay, I booked and shot 10 weddings over this warmer period, but now there are going to be 3 or 4 months where I'm just not going to be collecting any balance money, and I don't know how my bookings will go. That may be more of an issue. When I was at that stage of my career, I just had a second job. Like I shot other things apart from weddings.
Yeah.
Like as you may have too. In fact, I know you did. So I was doing real estate photography. So I was shooting houses. And whatever it takes to make ends meet. Like I was definitely not at the point where I was like, I'm only going to do weddings because that's my thing. I was like, hey, well, I need to eat.
So
I'm just going to do this as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. There was something else I was going to tack on to the end there, and I've forgotten what it was. Oh, no, that's what it I was going to say. How do you feel? Okay, no, two things. One is that I'm sure we've said this before on the podcast, but when it's summertime and you're busy, just a little nugget is to people, just keep marketing. Keep marketing when you're busy. Because you don't want to be marketing when you're quiet, because it's still a year away from when you're going to actually get that money. So that's one thing. Keep marketing when you're busy. And then I was just going to ask you, Tom, how do you feel about giving like discounts, like saying, oh, I don't know, if you book in the next month, you get some percentage off, those kinds of things. How do you feel about those?
I never do it. Partially because I've never had problems with booking numbers.
Sure.
But my general vibe about that is that you've got to be really careful doing that because I feel it can potentially cheapen a brand. And I don't want to, of course, speak ill of anyone who offers discounts. Like some of my friends who shoot weddings have done exactly that, and it works well for them. For me personally, I wouldn't. I can't imagine a scenario where I'd do that. I'm trying to think if I had one particular slot left that I hadn't filled and it was 3 months out. I'd just have the day off instead. So I personally would not do it, and I would counsel people to be very careful about how they do that, just because it can create this brand that people know as a brand that does discounts and is a discount brand and is a bit cheaper. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've done it before. It's certainly when I was, coming up, as a photographer, I did it. And I think you try these things. But
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm at the point now where if I don't want to discount a day because I might have sold the weekend before at full price. And then that poor bride is like, well, what's going on? He's...
Yeah, not fair, is it?
It's inconsistent, yeah.
Yeah, if one bride says refers you her friend, oh, he gave me this really great 10% discount, and then she inquires and you're like, nah,
yeah, sorry,
and she's like, well, why? Why? which sucks for cash flow, doesn't it?
Yeah. So anyway, good. Next one.
That's a good. I feel we did a quite good summary to that question.
Yeah, I think that was slightly professional.
Slightly. How's the weather there in Sydney?
No, today's not. Oh, I say it's nice. It's if it's a pretty crap summer's day. It's like overcast, cloudy, and I say it's cold. It's like 23 degrees. But in truth, this is the best day in so long because it's just been so hot. It's been like 30 plus degrees and really humid. Oh man, we've just been suffering, and now it's like a little bit cooler. I do not care about it being overcast. I'm just happy that it's nice and cold.
Cooler.
Yeah.
Hey, before you Before you, I think you have another question that someone asked. Am I right?
But I was going to just bring up a little thing that actually my wife just sent me a link to something that I'd love to tell you about.
I've got something to bring up too. Do you want to go first? Or
no,
should I
no,
go
you
first?
Go. You go.
Well, I'm just annoyed because I had to turn away this wedding in France because we will not be in France at the time.
Dang.
And that was my sadness of the last 2 days.
Aww.
Okay, what's your thing?
Oh, was that it?
Yeah, that's it.
I sort of think this isn't my thing, but this is like a sort of red panda. Not really.
Oh, wow. Red panda me?
I saw it on a website. Someone was looking for a photographer for Hawaii for June the 27th. I was like, ooh. And then I thought, no. And I looked at my calendar and I'm already booked.
In New Zealand?
In America.
Oh.
Stink.
Hawaii.
Yeah.
Hawaii's so good.
I'll be in Texas.
And that's annoying. Okay, what was that thing that...
yeah, okay. So my cat just sent me this link to Nokia. This, I don't know if this is real. It looks pretty real. Nokia are bringing out some retro phones. You know the old 3310?
I thought they died. Those, yeah.
Yeah.
They're bringing out a new 3310.
Yeah. They're bringing out like new... I don't know how it's going to be, but they're bringing out these new versions and they're promising a month standby battery, 22 hours, you know, talking time, all this sort of stuff. This is what professional podcasters say. I'll put a link in the show notes.
In the show notes. Do you even have show notes?
Yeah. I'll find some somewhere.
Maybe.
Lying around.
Hey, are these... I just Googled them. Are these with a 41 megapixel? Are these the one with the... there's like a blue one, a yellow one, a red one, a green one?
I don't know. The thing she sent me, it had a picture of a 3310. Nokia brand is rumored. Returning to the mobile space, make... So,
I just Googled it and I found articles as old as 2014 saying this.
This is here. Nokia will return in 2017.
Huh. Damn.
So that'd be interesting.
Because they totally died, didn't they?
Oh, poor old Nokia. Yeah.
Yeah.
They did what they did very, very well, and then they just didn't sort of manage in the new market.
The number of girls I used to text in my 33. You know. I was
predictive.
So good up, but I was so good at not predictive texting. I remember one time I had a race with someone, and remember Sophie from New Zealand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we had a race because I was like, I'm the fastest typer like in the world. And we had a race. I typed with non-predictive text, and she typed with predictive text on the Nokia. We had this, I was so good at it.
Nice. When predictive came out, that was it. As soon as my brain latched on to how it was, that it was doing the thinking for me, I was sold, man. It was amazing.
Oh, I lost that race, but yeah, that's why I moved to predictive text. But yes, remember Snake?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Were you good? I bet you were so good at that game.
Yeah. It was pretty good. Yeah, I was pretty good. My sister, she amazing.
She put
in the hours. I would happily trade because my favorite engineering and mechanics of a phone, my favorite style is a flip phone.
A
clam where you can just like push a button and it goes and opens and then you're talking and then you can go and close it. I love
that. Is that because it protects the keys or is it because you like that action?
No. I just love the mechanism, just being able to do like a physical hang up on someone and just be like... there's Tenacious D, Jack Black, Tenacious D?
Sure do.
They do these short films, or they did short films before they kind of became famous, and he's just talking about hanging up on someone and he goes, Shiklaki!
Shiklaki.
Shiklaki. And so it's just this... perfect word for closing a flip phone.
Shiklaki.
Yeah, I just love it. But unfortunately, and I see, like, not Apple, there have been rumors that there are patents out there for a folding screen.
I'm just trying to think how that would work.
So if it's a flip phone, the entire top and bottom is a continuous screen, but with a hinge in the middle.
Oh, wow.
If that came out, man.
It'd be like an iPhone that you would fold in half.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, okay. Oh, interesting.
I would just buy one who knows? Straight away.
What's that?
I would be in the queue down at the Apple store. I've never done that in my life, but I'd be there for that day.
Here are all my credit cards, charge any and all of
just
them.
Make
and
just it work.
Give me this device. Yeah. Put a number here and I'll pay it.
Exactly.
Here's my firstborn. Here's my car. Give me that thing.
Yeah, that'll be me. I'll be there.
There is something that I don't remember if someone... I think someone did ask me a question about this that we could talk about, and that was how to price yourself.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's probably a good one, because we talked about taking deposits and things. So, this probably is a nice little continuation from that.
Sure.
Okay, so we had the question about just how... I don't know. It's one thing also pricing yourself in the market, but then pricing your individual products as well.
It's hard. Okay.
It's really tough.
How did you come about with your prices? How did you figure out what your range was, and then how did you choose your packages and price them? Go.
Okay. Oh boy.
It's a hard one to answer.
So I started with three packages, and I've kind of kept this all the way through: a 4-hour, a 7-hour, and then an all day. And I'm not saying that's the best way by any means, but you know, you do these things. You just do what
there's
you
There's no best way, man.
No, there's no
best way. No.
So 4 hours, 7 hours, all day. And what I did is I basically worked out an hourly rate, and my hourly rate was X. Let's say, because it was a little while ago, let's say I wanted to be making $200 per hour. Now that's $200 at the wedding. So that means if I'm there for four hours, I'm going to be charging $800. But then I want 2 hours, $200 an hour for editing as well. So it's, I double that, right? So that was kind of a number where I thought, I'm just going to go on $200 an hour. Then what I did is I just multiplied that through for my other packages, but actually made them, as the higher you went, I just took off $50 or took off $100 to incentivize those higher packages. So let's say a 4-hour package, that's times 400 would be 1600. For a 7-hour package, it would be like, under that system, it would be $2,800. But I would just cheapen it a little bit, so it kind of seemed like a better deal if you were going for the more expensive. And then for the all day, I think I based it on 12 hours, but then I realized that was a lot. The dollar value is getting way up if I'm timesing that by 4 compared to the other ones. So I discounted that quite a lot to bring it into line and kind of make it look really attractive. But I know I'm still making, you know, it's always better to sell the higher package because you're getting more money for the day. It's not a lot of extra work. So anyway, all the numbers changed over time, and 400 was kind of, I mean, $200 an hour was just kind of a round number I threw out there, but it was pretty close to what I was working on. But I wanted to make sure that there was some kind of sound logic, like sound maths to my individual packages. It wasn't just random numbers that I threw out there. I wanted it to make sense, and that there was like a time versus money approach to it. And then as far as pricing myself in the industry, I had no idea what I was doing in the beginning. In the early days, I was just charging whatever I could to just get my foot in the door, just to shoot some weddings.
Wow, that's normal, isn't it?
Yeah. And now now I think what I do is as a salesman, I really want people to understand this. When you're a salesman, the only right amount of money to charge is as much as you can. That's the best thing you can do, because you
pretty much
you want to be charging as much as you possibly can, because it's the least work for the most return. But there's always that, like, is it like a bell curve where you can charge as much as you want, but are you going to be getting the numbers
charging what you want? But then if people stop wanting to pay that, then that's too much.
So it's
like,
the
people stop booking you, then.
Very basic accounting says you've got to take your average sale multiplied by the amount of sales you have for a year, and that's going to give you your income. So then you just work those two numbers. What's your average sale? How many sales do you want per year? And if you're aiming for 50 weddings and you're charging $2,000 a wedding, you're going to get $100,000. But if you don't think you can get to 50 weddings charging $2,000, you change it around. Or if you get 80 weddings and you're charging $2,000, you might think about increasing your price so that, you know, you're not having to work so hard. So that was very rudimentary. I feel like your way, Tom, might be a little bit more touchy-feely.
Actually, I think my way is a bit more fly by the seat of my pants. I do remember the very initially I did the same as you. So I was like, well, who knows if this is going to work. I'll just think of some money that I might like and I'll call that my first package. And I think that amount of money was... I think when I started shooting weddings for money, I think I was $1,500 or $1,800 or something. And I did two or three packages, and because I had no idea what people wanted. I didn't know about albums. I didn't know about how long... I didn't even know much about weddings, you know?
Sure.
So I kind of just thought, like you said, how much do I feel I want to have for this day, and I'll come up with this figure. I quickly realized that there was somewhat of an industry standard of money. Like I read a lot of things online and Facebook and stuff, and I was seeing photographers saying things like, oh, we don't like when new photographers come in and charge too little because it devalues the industry. And I was like, I don't really know what that means. I do now. I think what I ended up doing was looking to see what other people were charging. I think I did that, and I think that's okay to do that.
Oh yeah.
Try and figure out what various people charge. And I think what I actually did was there were some guys that I looked at and I was like, oh man, I could never charge that much. And then I thought, okay, and that's okay because I'm not as good as them and I'm not as experienced as them, so I'll charge a bit less. So I ended up fixing my rates based on what I thought my work was worth compared to the work of others who charged a certain amount. And then as my work improved, I improved my prices accordingly. So I'm the same. I think I have four packages, and 6 hours, 9 hours, 9 hours, and 12 hours. And so the six and the nine, the first two are just straight coverage. The next nine has an album and an engagement shoot. And then the 12 has an album and an engagement shoot too. And it took me ages to try and figure out how to increase that amount of money between each package. It's super hard to do, isn't it? So once I felt that I had got that my work was as good as other people's, then I had to try and figure out, okay, yeah, like you said, but what do I want to earn for these? And I said a moment ago that mine was more by the seat of my pants. Like I've never really done the maths. Like, okay, this is what I want to earn divide by this times by this. I've just been like, well, yeah, like you said, what's the most that I can charge? What is the absolute most that people are willing to pay for what I do?
Sure.
I'm going to charge that because I want the most amount of money possible, because at the end of the day, well, this is fun, but it's also a business, right? And this is how we earn our living. So my base... So I have four packages. I really only want people to book the second and the third. Like the 6 hour...
The two nines?
Yes. The lowest package is really there to make the second package look the best. Or that to look really appealing. And the highest package is there to make the second and third package look the most appealing. This is my strategy.
Okay.
I don't want to shoot 12-hour weddings, and I don't really want to shoot 6-hour weddings. I would prefer to shoot 9-hour weddings, which is why my 9 hours are what I make the most appealing. So the six maybe is a bit too expensive for what it is. So if someone does actually book it, no worries, because it's too expensive. So I get more money for doing less work.
Gotcha.
But ultimately, people are like, that one's, you know, not really worth it for how much it is. Look, if we just pay that little bit extra, we get this one. And I'm like, that's what I want you to think, because I want you to book that one.
Nice.
And then the 12, they're like, wow, that's ridiculously expensive. We're not going to book that. Let's book the lower one, which makes me happy. But if they do book the high one, that's fine too, because I'm getting so much money for the amount of work I have to do, that's also fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So
I can see you kind of shaking your head there. Oh, no, some type of disagreement.
Yeah, I'm thinking, no, it's nice because you're balancing the financial aspect of the shoot with your like your personal feelings, your relationship with the job.
And yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's nice because you're rewarded for all three options, because if someone chooses the cheap one, you're like, oh, well, it works out to be a good deal for you. And you're not actually having a big day, but that's okay. If you get the middle one, you're like, boom, that's exactly what I want.
Exactly what I want. And I'm at the point actually where I think I'm going to change things up a little bit, but that's how I've been going. And as to how I came up with those figures, oh man, it's very, very, now that I'm actually talking about it, I don't even know if I can explain how I came up with those exact numbers. I think I figured out what the market, this is more recently, with my most recent pricing update was about 8 months ago. I think I figured out what the going industry rate for 9 hours was, for people of my skill level and my experience.
Which I might just say is kind of almost, it's your perceived skill level, isn't it?
Totally it is. Like there's no static like bar which says your skill level. It's absolutely my perception of where I'm at and where other people are at too. Figured out what they were charging and what I was charging, decided if I could increase or does the market permit me to increase my rate or decrease. If it's an increase, okay, I'll set it at X. And also then, am I going to get bookings at X? Oh, look, it turns out I do. Sweet. And then I just chose, so I based all my other packages around that one. So the one package that I want everyone to book, that's the money I want. And then I adjusted my three other packages based on that.
I think that's nice. So that keeps it easy. You've got one kind of point of reference to the market.
You have an anchor.
Yeah, well said. And then you kind of tutu from there.
Well, I think there's no point kind of freewheeling and just randomly picking numbers for four or five or six or two or whatever packages. But if you just have one that you know is your set in your mind, then it's very easy to say, this package is 3 hours less than that one. I'm going to subtract more or less 3 hours of my whatever I charge myself per hour. But in my case, I said, okay, I'm not going to subtract three. I'm going to subtract two because I want to make this package too expensive, because I want to make that package reflect very positively on the one that I want people to book. I know I'm a bit confused, bit confusing now. And then going upwards. So let's say X package, the one I want people to book, 9 hours, doesn't have an album. So then the one step up, the next package has an album. So what's my cost for an album? My cost is X. How much time does it take me to build this album? Why? What's my dollar value on my outlay for the album and my time? It's whatever, Z. If I just add that amount to the package, to the previous package, then, well, that's the same as the person just buying a package and buying an album. So how do I sweeten this deal? In my case, if people are willing to spend $5,500 on me, then I'm going to throw in an engagement shoot, because the outlay for me is pretty small. I get more work for my portfolio. I get to build a rapport with the clients. So it's actually benefiting me as well. So as I said, like, take the package that I want people to book and then build on that. And that's what I did. So
nice.
I don't know. It sounds very, very hard to do though.
The free engagement shoot was something I was going to bring up with you, because people do it in the industry. Yeah, it's something that I don't like so much, just giving away a free thing. But hey, that's just me. But in your experience, you're obviously still doing it. It seems to go well.
Well, I only have them in two of my packages, the most expensive ones. And you've got to remember that the word free is just a word. Like, realistically, what I've done is I've built it into the package. It says, the reason I use the word free is so... they can't say to me
of value.
Absolutely. So A, it's a perception of, oh, if we do that, we get a free bonus. B, if it's not called free, I have sometimes people saying to me, oh, we want this package, but we don't want the engagement shoot. How much can you take off this package if we don't do that? So the fact that the word free is there means that I can say, no, you don't get a discount. Like, this is the package. If you want the engagement shoot, it's free. It's an add-on that I give you. Take it. But if you don't want it, then you don't have to take it. I'm not going to modify the cost of the package.
And have you ever had people that have got that top package but have not cared about the engagement shoot?
Absolutely.
And do you have to kind of... What happens when they want it's going to happen, like it, they want the shoot, but they just don't care about it, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah, man, nothing. It's very clear from the start that this, in my contract, it says if you book a package with a free engagement shoot, this is something I'm giving you as an extra bonus for booking one of my high packages, which is a lot of money. And if you choose not to take it, that's no problem, but I'm not gonna discount or give you anything in return.
Okay, like, that's good.
It's very clear from the start, and I've never had anyone, to my knowledge, I've never had anyone who's miffed or you know, feeling a bit disappointed in that scenario. I think on a few occasions, the other good thing about that is it gives you the leeway to be a good guy, and it gives you the ability to go, look, this is a free extra that I just give you, but I really like you guys. And I know you're not taking this shoot, which is obviously is time and money for me that I'm saving. So how about this? I'll do an extra hour at the wedding for you or something like that.
Okay.
Like, it gives you that ability to really be a good guy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I gotcha.
But if I don't, that's totally... I've never had any issues with that. Put it that way.
Nice. So...
Nice.
There I go again with my yes.
After the last podcast, Greg said to me, I've got to stop saying nice so much. And I was like, why? I keep saying it. I like it.
It's not nice.
Nice.
Hey, bro. So that's cool. It's Happy New Year, by the way. Did we actually say that?
Oh, yeah, man. Officially. Happy
New Year.
It's 2017. Oh, it's 2017.
Woo.
Oh, wait. Why is it not working? Hold on, wait.
It's on silent.
Oh, there we go. 2017. Oh, no.
I think I've worked it out. It's because you have your phone not on silent, and then you get a text message, and it dings, and then you put it on silent, and then you pick it up, and then it's on silent again.
That is exactly what happens. Oh, wow. Okay, now it goes on silent because those noises are loud.
Cool. All right, dude, it's been good. First podcast of the new year. Have you got...
All right.
When's your next wedding?
Yeah, I'm Friday. I start off with a crack. Two weddings this weekend. Woo. Friday, Saturday.
Nice.
Awesome. I got to say, man, I'm really looking forward to... It's been 2 weeks. It's been probably no more than 2 weeks, and I'm already like raging to get back into it.
Nice.
I can't wait to see what happens this year, and I can't wait to get shooting. What? Just said it again. Nice. I don't even know how you say it. Nice.
It's awful.
Can you give me an example? Go.
Nice.
It's like N-E-Y-C-E.
Yeah, I think there's a Y. Nice. It's N-Y. Yeah. Nice.
Is that a dog thing?
No, it's not a dog. I don't think people know. Oh, I love the dogs.
How nice.
Cool. My next wedding is not this... It's on the 15th, which is still two weeks away.
Where is that?
It's in Sydney, in the downtown area. Which
venue?
Will probably be a bit of a bun fight.
Yeah,
Sydney downtown. Hang on, I'll tell you the venue. I'm very Super good. Curious, no? I'm very good at not looking up information about a wedding until about a week before.
While you're looking, I'll tell you where mine are, okay?
Go.
Friday, I'm in a place called The Briars, which is a lovely venue in Barrel. Saturday, I'm at Benduli, which is like my second home, Benduli Estate.
Ah, Benduli.
Lovely winery.
I've never been.
It's smashing.
Smashing? Well, my wedding is at Blackwattle Bay in Sydney.
Is that the name of... That's the area?
Yeah, that's the area. I don't think the venue's called. They're not having it Blackwattle Bay is like just... Hang on. I'm showing my...
Is it... There's a boathouse there.
I think it might be at the boathouse. Either at the boathouse or just on some reserve there.
Oh, wow. That's an awesome little spot, man.
Yeah. Blackwattle Bay. My internet's horrendous.
I've just looked where it is, near the fish market.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So...
Oh, man. That's awesome.
So that should be quite nice. And then the day after that, I drive to the Gold Coast. And then the day after that, I fly back to New Zealand. And then that's it. I'm in New Zealand for ages.
And when's that wedding? That's on the... 15th. Oh, that's on the, like, the 13th and 14th.
15th, which is a 15th. Sunday.
Sunday, yeah.
Yes, and then I'm cool, back, man. On the 3rd of March for another wedding in Sydney. And then I'm back in November for a wedding in Sydney. But other than that, I'm based in New Zealand and in the
back
USA.
Back in Kiwi. Nice one.
Hmm.
Cool, man.
All right, dude. Good one. So
we got in deep today. Far out.
What was that?
I feel we got in. I feel we had less of a humorous episode and more of a nuggety episode.
It was quite nuggety, wasn't it? And less showboaty.
Yeah. Is that good or bad?
I don't know. People will be like, tell. We want the fun.
Yeah, I know.
We want.
Forget your educational crap. Just make jokes.
Okay. We'll see. We will see. We'll see if we struck a balance.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, pal.
Cool, man. I'm ready.
You want to do it? You ready?
Yeah, but you have to say
it. You know, I bumped into this
You're
going
to forget again, weren't you?
I bumped into this guy on the street. And he was like, hey, Greg, what's your New Year's resolution? And I was like, okay, pal, I'll tell you. My resolution is to, anytime I think that I can't make things happen, I'm going to say, hang on, no way, I'm going to try that again. Anytime.
Wow.
I told the guy, I was like, my New Year's resolution is, if I want to make something happen, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make it snappin'.
Nice.
All right, bud.